We hope you're having a good day today. Maybe your life will be a little more enriched by listening to our program. This is Health and Happiness, a regular edition on KGVM 95.9 FM and KGVM.org. We're happy to have the Gallatin Valley and the internet audience listening. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, and Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. We are your hosts. The Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee support this program, and we are fortunate to have KGVM to air it. Our topics vary, but health and happiness is always the theme. Obviously, many people in the world struggle, and today our guests will tell us about the ongoing challenges of large numbers of persons who have life, death, obstacles in their lives. Dr. Suzanne will now introduce.
Imagine with me if Yellowstone decided to finally blow up, as some have warned. Imagine Gallatin Valley with devastation. No electricity, no usable roads, no services of any kind. Further imagine your home in ruins and unusable. Imagine also it's very, very cold. You can't reach out. You can only wait for help. Today, this is your neighbor and mine in Turkey and northern Syria. And today we have with us a leader of the group who's going in to help. One who dedicates his time and his energy to reaching out to those in crisis. Eamon Fahey is the state director of the IRC, the International Rescue Committee, here in Montana, but his efforts reach across the world. Welcome, Eamon. We welcome you with some urgency today.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me. And it's always nice to speak with you, although I'm afraid the times that I do speak to you is always at a moment of humanitarian tragedy. So, I want to acknowledge first that it's nice to speak with you and your audience, but also, and I think you said it well in terms of being able to empathize with what folks in Turkey and Syria are going through right now.
It's kind of unimaginable. We can look at it and we can see it, but really we need to try to wrap our heart around it, don't we, Eamon?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's important, too, to acknowledge that this and other tragedies like this oftentimes happen to people who are already suffering from whether it's conflict, whether it's a result of some climate change going on. But you know, people the most in need, it has an especially strong impact on them when something like this happens.
And talk to us about what your work is, an overview of what the IRC does in this kind of situation or others, like you mentioned. It could be a variety of devastating reasons people need help.
Sure. Yeah, and so what I do and what our office that's located in Missoula does for the IRC is we're actually sort of on the back end of the work that we do. So we are helping getting people from harm to home. So we're resettling them into our community here in Missoula currently, but we also operate another 28 offices throughout the country that are involved in these resettlement activities. And what resettlement means is basically we are responding by receiving refugees and other displaced people to our community. This last year and a half in particular has been, we've seen three major humanitarian crises, and we have been in our own way responding to each of them. So a year and a half ago in August of 2021, the Afghanistan, we had a massive evacuation. In Montana, we received more than 110 Afghan, what are called humanitarian parolees. Again, people that were displaced by the conflict there. When the Taliban took over again, ruling that country, for fear of persecution, even death, needed to flee the country. Later, about 6 months after that, and we're nearly at the year anniversary of this, but when Russia invaded Ukraine, that was another huge humanitarian crisis that resulted in the displacement of millions and millions of people. And now we find ourselves responding to a third crisis, which is obviously the Turkey or the earthquake that happened last weekend in Turkey and Syria. We have been welcoming refugees from Syria, especially in the last year, year and a half. One of the previous administration had a so-called Muslim ban and that prohibited any refugees arriving to the United States from countries like Syria. And once that was lifted by the current administration, we started to see more Syrians, and we've welcomed well over 100 Syrians to Missoula through, again, our resettlement services. So that's what we do here in Montana. On a global scale, though, IRC is present in at least 40 countries currently. We have all kinds of services ranging from health and safety to disaster response, which is what is occurring right now, again, in Syria and Turkey. So just a couple of examples of the recent work that we have done sort of globally. Even prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, we set up an office in Poland in anticipation of such an event perhaps happening. Of course, once that Russia did invade Ukraine, we saw a huge migration, a huge event of great displacement where people had to flee their homes. There's something that's called internal displacement, where they have to flee their homes, but they remain in country. Many, many millions of people in Ukraine are internally displaced. In addition to those folks, many had to actually leave Ukraine. We set up an office again in Poland, we're supporting all of those folks that, again, felt like they needed to flee Ukraine. We also set up an office in Moldova, another country bordering Ukraine. In Syria, we've been in country for more than 10 years have been providing various services, including, again, health, women, programs for women and children, And currently, we have mobilized and have 1,000 staff that have been are in the Syria and Turkey region on the ground right now. So it's pretty amazing work how quickly we can respond again to these crises. We're also a very forward-looking organization. We're studying and looking at many, many factors throughout the world and trying to understand where are we going to be needed, even if it may not be needed currently. And that's one of the things that enables us to respond so quickly in situations like this.
How do you deal with the resistance in Syria or getting across the border? I know that there maybe is only a very narrow pathway to get from Turkey, for example, into Syria due to the conflict in Syria over the years.
Yeah, so these all make things all the more challenging. Establishing relationships with folks on the ground in these countries allows us to go into these areas, even when it can be really, travel both between countries, and then once you're in the countries, can be very, very dangerous and certainly very difficult. I really can't tell you how much I admire my colleagues who are overseas doing this work because of those difficulties, because of that danger that they're putting themselves in. And I'll also acknowledge I learned several days ago that a couple of my colleagues working in, I believe they were both in Turkey, but lost their lives during this earthquake. It's certainly impacted the lives of many of the folks that we've resettled here in Missoula. We've lost colleagues to this disaster as well.
We're so sorry to hear that. Tell me a little bit, do you know what the white hats are in Syria? I think they're called white hats or white helmets. They have to do with some kind of volunteer effort in Syria. Do you know anything about that?
I do not. I believe I've heard about that group. It's people again responding to the great need in that area who are jumping in to help. In a place like Syria, there is trauma upon trauma upon trauma. And most certainly now it is the place in the world with the most displaced people. I know prior to this earthquake, it and Ukraine and Venezuela all had sort of similar numbers of refugees as determined by the United Nations High Commission on Refugees. And now, most certainly, that number, because there are literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who have lost their homes due to this earthquake. Fear... even if their home was not totally destroyed, they fear going back for fear that, there was structural damage, water has been polluted, all kinds of issues that we may not think of. And obviously, when you see some of the images, you're looking at just massive destruction. So it not only impacts those folks, though, but it, again, trickles down is impacting, nearly everyone in those earthquake affected areas.
If we could, Eamon, I'd like to diverge for just a moment to how we could help. First of all, I'd like to say that I checked out Charity Watch, which is an organization that guards what we give, so to speak, to make sure that when people give money, that it is going to the purposes for which you intended it. And we all worry that if we give, you know, how do we know that that's going to really be a help? But I'd like to state up front here that Charity Watch gave IRC an A+ for their efforts. And so you've got the highest rating possible in how you go about using those things that people give. And if you could take a moment and tell people how to make a connection, we'll come back to it again before we end. But how, if anybody listening would like to donate to this effort.
Yes, thank you. Yes, IRC is very proud of that. The fact that we've received that rating, and we of course take that very, very seriously. If folks are donating to us, we are putting that money to work. I believe it's near 90% of the funds that are donated to the IRC are used for direct assistance. So meaning they go to help on the ground, whether that's providing cash assistance, whether it's providing for shelter. I know in Syria and Turkey right now, we are setting up safe spaces for women and children. We are delivering blankets. Suzanne, you had mentioned the fact that not only has this happened, but it's also very cold, which is the case right now in Turkey and Syria. So all of these things, hot water, potable water, end up, that's what's needed, medical care. And so that's where, again, if you were to donate to IRC, these funds would go directly toward those activities.
What's an easy way to donate, Eamon?
Yeah, so the easiest way is by going to our website, which is rescue.org. So again, rescue, the RESCUE.org. And that's our main website. And there you will see right there when you log on to the page, there is you're able to contribute directly to, again, earthquake relief. So going right to, again, responding to that, to the crisis. The other ways you can contribute to IRC, if you wish to contribute to the work that we do here in Montana, again, which is not necessarily tied directly to what's going on in Turkey and Syria, although, again, we have been resettling many, many Syrians, is by going again to rescue.org and then /Missoula. And that will take you to our sort of landing page for our office. And so if you prefer to keep that money locally, that's another option.
Thank you. I want to just mention some words of Aesop, the philosopher, that no act of kindness, no matter how small, is ever wasted. In Matthew 25:40 from the Bible, whatever you did for the least of these brothers of mine, you did it for me. So let's keep in mind our faith and our concern for our fellow humans on this earth, and let's reach out to the IRC. We really
need to. Yes, thank you, Suzanne.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to also ask about, you mentioned the Missoula office, and at one time there was a Bozeman arm of that. Do you still have that going, where that group was making baskets for the people who resettled into Montana?
Yes. There is a wonderful organization there in Gallatin County called Gallatin Refugee Connections. I actually, in a couple weeks, I'm looking forward to visiting Bozeman and Gallatin County. A couple of colleagues and myself are going to make a road trip down there meet with MSU with a couple of departments, and I believe doing a career fair. But we're also going to be doing an event, and we haven't figured out what exactly. We're looking to reserve the Emerson event space, but to do an event with our friends from Gallatin Refugee Connections. And one of the things that, again, that you all have, and this makes a huge difference, but is Gallatin Refugee Connections basically does a drive where all kinds of goods are collected. This includes things like utensils and plates and pots and pans. And these are all put into a bin. Each of the families that we welcome to Montana, we provide them with these supplies. So they include, again, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, all kinds of supplies for folks, again, who have come over with maybe just a backpack in some cases, and maybe a suitcase or two. But they've left all of their belongings back overseas. So when they arrive here, they're literally starting anew. And these welcome kits, we call them welcome kits, go a long way to literally welcoming them to their new life in the United States. So I believe those efforts might be going on right now, where Gallatin Refugee Connections is collecting those items. At the beginning of April, they will be loaded up in a U-Haul. And last year I greeted the U-Haul when it arrived, and it was a U-Haul plus a U-Haul trailer. Just a lot of goods. So this year, again, I think around April 1st is when we're expecting the next delivery. And we are so very grateful for the great generosity that we received from Gallatin County.
Can you tell us some stories of, or one or two, perhaps, of refugees that are doing well, and what's happening to them?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that's been so nice to see. So I started in this work a couple of years ago. So back in this time of year in 2021, and we were in the middle of COVID at that time. And the office had been operating in Missoula for about 4.5 or so years. We're now in our seventh year. One of the most rewarding things to see is that many of those the families that had arrived in 2016, 2017 are really putting down roots in the community. And within the last year and a half, we've had the first family and then several others actually buy homes, which you can imagine. I don't think our housing market is as expensive as it is in Gallatin County, but still very expensive right now in Missoula. How challenging something like that would be. Other instances, students are enrolling in colleges and universities. So we have students here in Missoula enrolled at the Missoula College and enrolled in BA programs at the University of Montana. I just spoke a couple of nights ago with someone who came here as a teenager. So they arrived 4 years or so ago, But they are in the middle of pursuing their social work degree at the University of Montana. You also be, I'm sure your audience will be happy to know that this fall, we had again another person who arrived as a teenager enroll at Montana State. And she's studying, you know, something very easy like molecular biology or something. So, yeah, so all of these great things are happening. Others are starting businesses. There's a great restaurant here, well, a couple of restaurants that serve sort of Middle Eastern cuisine, so food from Iraq and Syria.
Yum.
So it's so wonderful to see, again, that these communities are taking hold. And the final sort of sign of this is we are now receiving what are called family tie cases. And what family tie cases are families that are, you know, established here now in Missoula who are bringing family members along. So this might be their mother. It might be some adult children who are also being resettled here. So really, in particular, the Congolese community, the Afghan community has, even though that's really only been going on for about a year and a half, but they're also beginning to put down some roots. And you know, and then of course the Syrian community is we've seen a big influx recently, but that community is really taking hold in Missoula as well.
And you know, in looking over this topic, one of my favorite findings was that over the last 50, 60, 75 years, 75% to 80% of new businesses in the United States were started by immigrants or children of immigrants. So what they bring is a fresh outlook and a whole new perspective, and that sounds very, very helpful to me.
Yes, no, indeed. And this is something that I'm afraid we sometimes forget, that, again, this, you know, except for indigenous folks, immigration is part of all of our stories. You know, in my case, I can trace one set of, and actually they would be, I think, maybe even called refugees at this point. But they were Protestants who lived in France, and in 1703 came through to what was then the colonies, the 13 colonies, through the port of Baltimore. So they needed to flee France again because of religious persecution. So going way back, and then of course there are more immediate stories of immigration. But that's part of all of us. Our so many of us our stories. Are these immigrant stories. And they're one of the things that makes our country so great. Again, you mentioned just bringing this new ideas and diversity. There's huge value to that. It's literally the oxygen that we need in our blood to keep us going. And I'm afraid some of us forget that's part of who we are. We are literally a country of immigrants. So what you just stated in terms of entrepreneurs, new businesses, that's our history, you know, continues to be the case. So that's one of many reasons to do this. We can help folks out, and it has this huge added benefit to our nation's economy, as well as our culture. It just sort of touches on everything, and I really and I think I've probably mentioned this before when I've talked to you, but this is in our DNA. And we need to, in order to solve, one of the greatest crises we're facing right now, which is, again, migration. The number of displaced people now is higher than it's ever been in human history. The amount of refugees now is over 100 million. And this is before, again, the most recent humanitarian crisis. And that's not to mention, folks that are seeking asylum in our country or, trying to immigrate to our country for various other reasons. And in order to solve what is a very, very difficult thing on many, many levels, we again, and we can do this, but we need to tap into, again, that that part of us that, again, I mentioned is part of our DNA, this notion of being a nation of immigrants.
And that's a very intelligent response to a problem. I love that your organization was founded July 24th, 1933, in New York City by none other than Albert Einstein. What
yes.
a remarkable beginning. And so for each of us, the intelligent thing to do is to enrich our country by lending a hand and helping others who will only come here and enrich us further.
Exactly right. Exactly right, Suzanne.
I assume that Dr. Einstein did that as a result, or partially as a result, of what was happening in Nazi Germany. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Yes. Again, nearly 90 years ago, our organization was founded, and it's one of my favorite fun facts to share at the suggestion of Albert Einstein. And it was to do exactly that, to get folks who were being persecuted out of Nazi Germany. We tell that story because, again, that's part of our DNA. And I think we're still true to that purpose. Our mission is to serve those in harm's way, whether it be due to conflict or environmental disaster, like the case of the earthquake, or climate change. Mm-hmm. We stay true to that in all of the things that we do.
And, there's such a richness to your outreach. I know that you also address, as part of IRC's work, human trafficking, which is particularly violent among children and young
yes.
people.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And many, 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 many of our programs, particularly overseas, are focused on wellness and safety of women and children. I was doing some research on this not too long ago, but talking about sort of climate refugees. So those refugees that had to that were displaced due to climate change. So this might be because of rising sea levels, and maybe they're they make their living as fishermen and women, are literally cannot make the living in the way that they have due to climate change. Or it might be something more, farmers are big time impacted by climate. And what was maybe once fertile farmland due to drought, they no longer can farm. So anyway, climate refugees. But 80% of climate refugees are women and children. So it has a disproportionate impact on those folks. And again, so we respond as IRC, we respond to those most in need of those who are most in need.
That is so excellent to hear, Eamon. And I know that I read also that not just a person can partner up and donate or volunteer for IRC, but groups can do so, like a neighborhood association or a school group or a Rotary could adopt and partner with IRC. How does that work for any out there who's in a group that might be able to help?
Yeah, great question. And so this is the resettlement sort of process is going through some pretty big changes right now. So historically, the way that the IRC in the United States, we are what's called a resettlement agency. And we're one of 10 resettlement agencies that operates in the United States. And so resettlement agencies is defined by the Refugee Act from 1980. And we've sort of been operating under this act and the regulations that have subsequently been put in place. We've been operating under again, that act. As I mentioned earlier, the refugee numbers now are have surpassed World War II, which was the last time that we had just these huge numbers of displaced people. I think I mentioned it's over 100 million, 103 million as of last summer, sort of the last time that the United Nations High Commission on Refugees announced those numbers. So anyhow, there's just this increased need for resettlement. And in order to do that, we need as many hands helping as we can get. So there are these new sponsor, they're called sponsorship models that are out there. Again, this allows community members or individuals to work either on their own or with a resettlement agency to help resettle folks. So one good example is the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians that are now being resettled in the United States are not being resettled by resettlement agencies. We do have a role in, as a resettlement agency in helping the Ukrainians, but they are being sponsored by individuals in the United States who go out and apply to be a sponsor. That's done through a website that the State Department puts out there. So the last I heard, I think we had more than 200 sponsors. So folks sign up to be sponsors from Montana. That included, I think the highest number was in Bozeman, and then Missoula, and then some of the other big cities, but folks from all over the state. I had to look on a map to find some of the places that, where again, people had signed up to sponsor Ukrainians. It's very complicated because there are several different programs. Some of them, they work closely with the resettlement agency. We actually did that ourselves here in Montana by placing approximately 20, 25 to 28 Afghans in Helena and working with a co-sponsor. So this was a group that in Helena that I started engaging with right after the evacuation in Afghanistan happened. 6 months later, they were welcoming Afghans to their community. I also engaged actually with folks in Bozeman to do the same. Unfortunately, we just never got the Afghans, that program sort of begun to wind down. But there are similar sort of programs that are ongoing. again, in the sponsorship world. So it, again, it's hard to describe because there are all these different models, but it's really exciting to see that we're doing this now because I think we have to. Again, to meet the demand, we need to get as many folks involved in this as we can.
What does it involve if you decide that you want to help an Afghan family or one of those persons or groups from the earthquake? Do you, what is required of you to do that?
Yeah, so again, it depends a little bit on which program. I don't want to get lost in the weeds of this. But essentially, in order to resettle someone, and this is what we do as a resettlement agency, but we greet them at the airport and welcome them. But then we are required to provide them with a whole bunch of basic necessities. So housing. Currently it's tough to find apartments and housing in Missoula right now. So sometimes that means they're maybe living in a hotel room for a couple of weeks, or maybe an Airbnb. And you can imagine how expensive that can get. We're also providing, we talked about it earlier, but these various provisions. So things to, once you do have permanent housing, to furnish your home with. So that includes everything from kitchen utensils and bakingware and cookingware to providing actual couches and tables, beds, mattresses, bedding, all kinds of things. So providing, again, for those immediate needs. In addition to that, we are connecting folks with various social programs. And including making sure that they're getting adequate health care. So there's actually a lot that goes into this.
Goodness, yes.
And it's historically we've relied again on resettlement agencies to be able to provide for that. But now it's being opened up a little bit. But still, these are the types of things that, through these various sponsorship agencies that need to be provided to somebody who's being sponsored.
And I would assume the ultimate goal is to assist these refugees to find work and find housing and become independent members of our communities.
That's exactly right. And you can imagine the breadth of experiences that somebody, arriving to the United States might have. Somebody might arrive and they speak English very well. Well, it might be very easy to find them a job then. And so they're able to get self-sufficient pretty quickly. Somebody else may not speak English. They may not even be able to read. The language that they know. And all of them are bringing with them, and this is very appropriate for this program, but again, this trauma. Not only the trauma that caused them to have to flee their home and leave loved ones behind and leave the place that they call home, but there's the trauma of traveling to a brand new culture, so a very immediate trauma. Some folks are able to cope better than others with that. So it's a really sort of a complex thing. And I've discovered through this work, even as a resettlement agency, we can't do any of this on our own. We are relying on partner agencies and all kinds of different institutions and individuals to help us do this work. So this idea of sponsorship is just, again, trying to broaden that. And it's going to be challenging, but ultimately in the end, we need that, again, because we're going to be just responding to this is one of our humanity's great challenges right now, is how to take care of these folks, again, that have been displaced.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And I always love to just mention one immigrant who arrived after great violence in Liberia, a tall person, a gentleman who only weighed 97 pounds. He'd been through such privation and arrived in Montana. And this gentleman immediately got to work. He did have good English skills, but he's now serving as his second term as mayor of Helena. He has given so much back to the community and his wife, and I think you know him too, probably, Eamon.
I do indeed, yes, Mayor Collins, and he is a wonderful, wonderful human being.
We had him on our show and interviewed him, and his story is just remarkable, much like those you're serving right now today and what they'll be able to accomplish now that they're having a chance to get established again.
Indeed, yes.
I wanted to ask, what motivates you personally to do this kind of work?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. The work itself, I find a great deal of satisfaction. And I also love the people I get to work with in doing it. You know, standing shoulder to shoulder with people who are driven, you know, to make a difference in people's lives. And I get a lot of energy, from that, you know, from not only the people we serve, but the people I serve with. Between those two things, I couldn't really ask for anything more. I find such great satisfaction in this work. You know, would commend anyone. It was fun. Last week, I just presented to a program for high school students about international careers that was put on by the Montana World Affairs Council. Would commend anybody again who is driven to serve and is curious about the world. You know, this might be something that you would find fulfilling too. I feel very fortunate to have found this work.
That brings me. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, Suzanne has a number of famous quotes. I think I'd like to hear those.
Well, we'll do that in a second. I was going to say also, last time we gave you an opportunity, if you need other staff members, to tell us what kind of positions might be open in Missoula at the IRC. Are you fully staffed now?
We are not, we are just continuing to grow. I think I mentioned I started this work 2 years ago, and at that time we were an office. An office of four full-time employees, and then we had some support staff that were part-time, including interpreters and things. Now we're a staff of 21 full-time employees, and growing. I was just sharing with my staff sort of my plans for hiring in the next several months, and we're looking to add, you know, another eight or so full-time staff to our team. And these include roles like caseworker, which is somebody who helps, again, with that initial resettlement process. Includes roles, I spoke about the sponsorship models. Folks that would be working on outreach to find those groups that might be interested in being sponsors. What else do we have? We have one sort of administrative role. We recently promoted internally a finance and operations person to a they're now a finance manager, so they'll be focusing exclusively on our finance. So we now need somebody to perform sort of an operations role in our office. So anyway, those are just a couple of the types of positions we're hiring for. Mm-hmm. Again, when I'm looking to hire people, the most critical things are curiosity and adaptability. Not necessarily looking for people with a certain degree or anything like that, but if they have those two things and can show that, you know, those are the types of folks that that we're looking to add to the team.
Okay, well, hopefully someone out there will want to join this wonderful team. And I know that Winston Churchill said, "We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give." So what you're doing is making a life not only for yourself, but for many others that come to our state, Montana, and find a new home. And imagining what they've come from to make it to this place and then have a warm welcome, that is just very joyful, very joyful.
It is.
Kind of probably the highest kind of joy when you can give. Mother Teresa once said, "We know only too well that what we are doing is nothing more than a drop in the ocean. But if the drop were not there, the ocean would be missing something." So really,
excellent.
No donation is too small, and no donation of any kind is unworthy. Are there ways to volunteer here, Eamon?
Yeah, there are. Another shameless plug again for this sponsorship idea. That is the greatest contribution you could make. We also look for volunteers and interns to support us. In relation to Gallatin County, I'm looking forward to going. I would love to get some folks from some MSU students to come join us, and whether it's for the summer or for a semester, serve as an intern with us. Sometimes we just need help. For instance, if we're setting up a new home for somebody, we might need to borrow a pickup truck to transport things. So volunteering in that regard, just giving your time feel free to reach out to us. And we post on our website, which is again rescue.org/Missoula, some of those volunteer and internship opportunities. So I commend people to visit the site to get some more details on that.
Yes, we were so impressed. We came by your offices maybe a couple of years ago now, and the interns were loving what they were being able to do and loving working in that office. And it seemed like a very delightful way to spend your time.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and I think since you visited, we've as our staff has grown, we've had to, we long ago outgrew our old office, so we're now in a new office. We entered into this new lease and things back in August, and at that time I said, "Oh my gosh, we're going to have so much space to, you know, expand." And but now I'm having to convert everything to office space, and we're quickly running out of room again. But it's nice that we're able to work together. and have lots of space to meet and serve and work with clients as well.
And I know that President George H.W. Bush said there could be no definition of a successful life that does not include service to others. So, folks, here's your opportunity. And nothing
yes.
could be more profound as a way to give and support each of us.
Yes, yes, indeed. And just to reiterate, that's why I find this work so fulfilling. The work that we do is a work of serving others. There could be nothing more valuable, I think, than that. And again, I think that's why I find this so satisfying, this work that we do, because it is challenging too. Very challenging work, but it's that satisfaction that we gain from serving others and doing great work with others keeps me coming back every day to return to this work.
As our list, the psychologist has said many times over the years, people are messy, meaning that what you do is not without its challenges and without a great effort, but so worth it and so worthy. And so we all need to dip in there and try to do our part. We've got just a little bit of time left.
We have a couple of minutes. Is there anything you haven't said you'd like to be sure to say on this broadcast today?
I don't think so. No, I think we've touched on most everything I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of territory. I know there are people out there who would like to give. Hopefully this will be an impetus for them to do so. When Albert Einstein started the whole process, I know he certainly seemingly could see into the future. Hopefully he saw that this was really going to progress. And I wonder between that time, was 1934 or so now, how many people have been served by IRC? You have any idea?
Yeah, I know that it's been literally millions and millions. I was looking at our report sort of for the work that we do, and this is from a couple of years ago. I think the most recent was our 2021 fiscal year. And it listed something like 30.5 million, or I don't remember if I'm remembering the exact number. But anyhow, you get a sense of how many people, IRC is serving and working with throughout the world. And that's in 1 year. many, many millions of folks have been impacted and served by the work that this organization does.
We're going to stop here in just a moment. In fact, I would like to stop with Suzanne giving another quote or two. But we'd like to tell the Gallatin Valley group, we thank you for listening to KZVM 95.9. Been a very loyal audience. Hope you continue to grow and give to people and agencies like IRC. Suzanne will end with a quote.
Well, I'm going to quote a study that found that you should actually give to IRC because neurons in the portion of the brain associated with a sense of satisfaction start firing when a person chooses to donate money. These results are a fascinating reminder of the intrinsic motivation to share and make the world a better place.
Thank you, IRC. Thank you, Gallatin Valley. And we'll see you again next week.